Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome to the premiere episode of the Fell Into Food podcast, where we talk about everything in the culinary landscape, including current trends, kitchen technology, equipment, and much more. I'm your host, Chef Jeff, Jeff Fell. We're here live in the gorgeous IDM content kitchen. Excited to be here live. My guest today is Unilever Senior Corporate Chef Alvy Lima. But before we jump into it, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor for today's podcast, Invacus. Invacus specializes in helping commercial operators find the right vacuum packaging solutions to fit their needs in the food service and food processing industries. Invacus is the exclusive North American importer for Hinkelmann commercial vacuum sealers and GreenVac vacuum systems. They offer expert sales, support, and product knowledge for the full line of countertop, floor, and industrial commercial vacuum sealer machines from Hinkelmann and the vacuum systems from GreenVac. To learn more, visit Invacus.com. That's Invacus.com. I personally love the machines. I want to welcome Chef Alvy to the podcast.
Thank you.
Have you ever used, I'm sure you've used vacuum sealers, but have you ever used a Hinkelmann?
I have not. This is really cool. I'm kind of intimidated right now seeing all this stuff because it's all so clean. I mean, obviously, you know, being in operations before, seeing all these pieces of equipment all beat up and run down, this is really sweet to see. So thank you for having me, though. This is
absolutely
awesome.
So I want to first jump into a little bit. Give me like the quick background glimpse of, one, how you got into this crazy food industry, because I think we all have kind of like just that weird niche of how we got in. And then two, just a brief summary of like how you got at Unilever ultimately and kind of what you're doing now.
Yeah. So, you know, I started cooking when I was 9 years old. I was just always curious to what was going on in the kitchen. And that kind of just got me started. At the age of 14, my father was working at a hotel in Glendale Heights, not too far from here. And I just kind of started working as like a dishwasher, a prep cook. Like, I just always helped, right? I'd go in on the weekends, and then the owner was like, you look kind of old. Why don't we hire you on, you know, you can work after school on Thursdays, Fridays, and then you could work all of our banquet events and stuff like that. So started working, and I just got so fascinated by how the chef ran the kitchen. Like, I was just like, I want to be that guy, because he was the coolest guy there. You know, he was the one dictating what was going on. He was the one firing orders. Like, he, you know, so I was just like, I don't want to be this guy that's chopping. I want to be that guy that's telling everybody what to do, and then tasting things and stuff like that, and plating things. So I thought that was really cool. So that kind of got me more interested. I then, during high school, was introduced to the Technology Center of DuPage, which a lot of people know it as Davia from the past. And I kind of did a little culinary there. My junior and senior year, got involved with competitions and stuff like that. And then really grew a passion for food, even more than what I already had. So, you know, we started competing and stuff like that. It was a quick realization. I'm not going to be a professional soccer player, but I could be a professional chef. Right. So I kind of did that. And then from there, it's kind of when I learned a little bit about food manufacturers, right. And Unilever, in itself. And it was, they had their corporate office in Lisle. And it was just one of those things that, you know, I got to see, you know, recipe and menu development. We got to see what these corporate chefs were doing. They were traveling across the country, doing trade shows, doing events, doing demos for hundreds and thousands of people. And I was like, back to that, you know, 14-year-old kid, I was like, that's what I want to do. You know, and here at 18, right, 4 or 5 years later, you're like, that's what I really want to do. You know, so I was luckily enough that when I went to College of DuPage, Unilever was like, hey, would you like to do an internship with us? You know, we'll help pay for your schooling, and you could work here, you know, whenever you're not at school. So it was like, the coolest thing ever. I just thought I was so cool. I was like, I get to work with some of the coolest chefs in the world. And to me, it was like, these guys were the best of the best, right? There was a master chef, you know, not to just drop names, but Steve Gilliba, he's my mentor, and he happens to be a master chef. You know, so it was really cool to work under him. You know, David Russell, another really well-known name in Chicago. And, you know, at a very young age, you're thinking, wow, I get to work with such cool guys and learn a lot about food. But then fast forward, you know, I did my internship, worked with them for about 3 years. And then they were like, look, you got to go out to the real world, right? You need to go be an operator. And I did that. You know, I worked at different companies like Quest. I worked at places like Sodexo, worked for a little bit of Compass for a while. And then I did some high-end catering. I worked at a nice fine dining seafood restaurant. So I did a little bit of everything. And then fast forward 10 years, they're like, hey, we're hiring for, you know, an entry-level corporate chef. Are you interested? Wow. And I was like, absolutely. I was like, I haven't stopped using the product since, you know, I left. And that kind of...
So you were introduced to it early, right? Yep. It was kind of the, hey, this is cool, but get some practical life experience, right? But
exactly.
Then they were always, obviously, the connection was there. And then when, you know, the experience hit, it was finally like, yeah. All right, we've got it. All right, so... You're now Unilever, right? You've worked your way to the senior corporate chef. What is it? I think a lot of people don't know, right? This side of the business, especially, you know, non-commercial, right? Everyone knows the restaurant side of things and what they see on TV, et cetera. But the non-com or even the manufacturer side, people don't get a good glimpse into that world, right? Because it's kind of the... No, when I went to culinary school, no one talked about that. It was, hey, do you want to go work at the Four Seasons? Hey, do you want to go work on a cruise ship or yacht or whatever, or like all these high-end catering, et cetera? And it was like, yeah, it seems cool, but, you know, I ended up in the hotel world or the casino world and learned real quick that you get your butt kicked real quick. And I was like, I don't know if this is for me. So I found, luckily, the non-com education side. But so now you're at Unilever, you've got, you know, to me, it's one of the prize jobs in this industry. What is it like? Like, what do you do, and how does that differ from the typical everyday chef, you know, that's in the grind, you know, at their facility? What is it that you do that differs from them?
Yeah. So, I mean, basically what we get to do is we get to provide solutions, right? You know, this is, you know, we create these convenience products to help alleviate some of that stress in the back of the house, right? So you have a lot of chefs that love to do things from scratch. And unfortunately, there's just no more time and or, you know, the staff that some of these restaurateurs are hiring just don't have the experience or don't have that skill set, right? So us being able to provide, you know, a unique convenience product to help alleviate all that is phenomenal. So I don't necessarily develop the products, but we get to develop recipes, we get to develop menus on how to utilize that product and how it's going to be easier for that end user, right, for that operator. So every day for me is a little bit different. You know, some days I'm working with distributors and we're doing DSR meetings, teaching, you know, their sales force how to sell our product. How is our product going to benefit their customers, right? Where is the return on using this product? So that could be something I'm doing, or I'm traveling to work at a convention, right? Where we're doing multiple meals. So like just recently we were in Napa Valley where we did the World of Flavors.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
And so like this is where a lot of, you know, food manufacturers get together. We put on a show. We literally are cooking for like 5 days. And then we're presenting all this food to, you know, customers of all sorts. It could be schools, it could be hospitals, it could be, you know, upscale hospitality groups. It could be a hotel. It could be anybody really in the industry. And it's really neat. You got mixologists, you got chefs, you got people doing demos, you got all sorts of things happening. So think of like the NRA, but like a little bit smaller and really good food, right? It's not just a bunch of fried stuff and you're walking around like you're about to tip over. But that's really what I get to do. I get to innovate in that sense of, you know, being able to create recipes, create some menus that are going to, you know, benefit a customer. You know, maybe their pain points are, you know, thickening soups or not being able to properly make sauces, right? That's something that we've noticed recently is at college and universities, you know, the creation of some sauces is where they break, right? Or they get lumpy and stuff like that. How do we fix that? You know, being able to introduce a product to show them, hey, this is how you're going to prepare it. And, you know, show them the stability of the product and how it's going to be able to sit in a steam table or, you know, be able to go into an oven and stuff like that. So, it's a really neat, job, you know, if you will. So you're right. I did hit the jackpot. I do feel like I won a big prize. I'm going on my 10th year. It's amazing to be here. So,
yeah. So you get to see obviously a lot of the tech then in the food world, right? Especially if you're around those kind of manufacturers, you're seeing probably some of the cutting edge stuff that's coming out, and it has come, I mean, as you know, so far from where it was. And like you said, with staff shortages and, or not the skilled type culinarians, right? It's not like everyone's like, oh, I can't wait to go to culinary school anymore, right? We had that pop with Food Network TV, as I call it, kind of phase, what, maybe 10-ish, 15 years ago. But it's kind of like people are like, that's a lot of hard work, and I don't want to do that hard work. So you get to see a lot of those products that then help the operator, right? So what are some of those things, or what sets Unilever apart, and what's their approach to some of that culinary innovation as it's rapidly developing as the rest of the world is?
Yeah, I mean, I think what sets us apart is we host a lot of events where we try to gauge a lot of these consumers' interests, right? What are you in search for? What are you seeing out there that you would need? What are you seeing out there that you would want? And then we try to develop after, you know, seeing all that, after hearing all their feedback. You know, we haven't necessarily developed anything extremely new per se. But, you know, some of the things that we are working towards is cleaning up our labels, right? So being able to, you know, still provide a great quality product, but with a much cleaner ingredient.
Well, yeah, I think everyone's cleaning up their labels, right? Everything has got to be cleaner because the consumer wants cleaner, easier. You have to, right? And I think with the tech and food science, the way it's going, I praise what those food scientists can do to keep things clean, right? I know when I got introduced to Unilever, was out in Sun Valley, and I saw some of the products, and I was like, how have I not seen this stuff, right? Or it has such a bad rap, right? You think, oh, cream base, or you think, oh, soup in a bag where it's dry, like Idahoan has a great product, right? That's dehydrated and you reconstitute it, but it's just as good as almost the fresh thing. And people can't tell because that's the way it's going. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's such an opportunity here, especially in the education space, right? You don't have those skilled labor people. So how do you, you know, have solutions that you can have, you know, maybe one person in the facility that has some sort of culinary background. So it's super awesome to see that kind of stuff. So you said, you know, you don't get to work on stuff, but you're working on some stuff. Is there anything in particular you're excited about, or anything we can get a sneak peek into that Unilever's doing? Nothing to get you in trouble, but coming down the pike?
That's awesome that you asked that, because I was a part of the development process of a new product that just launched probably 5-6 weeks now. It's called our Knorr Caldo de Vegetales. So if you've ever used the Knorr chicken bouillon, the little cubes that you can buy on retail, or even like the glass jar that you can find on retail, or I think Cardi B did a big thing with our retail team. So it's actually a vegetarian version of that. So literally it's almost like taking out that chicken ingredient and then providing all of those aromatic spices and aromas and herbs and stuff, to make a killer, vegetable bouillon. I actually just made a pozole verde with mushrooms the other day, and it was amazing. I was at a distributor meeting and I wanted to make something vegetarian, and I took that opportunity. They loved it. I think it's going to be an amazing product. Obviously, as you know, the trend is plant forward, right? Yep. You know, and so how do we gauge, you know, obviously Knorr Caldo is one of our larger SKUs, right? One of our biggest movers at the company. And it's just one of those things, like, you know, if you can't use that product, what could you use? And so that's kind of why we came out with that vegetable variant. And I hope it's going to be extremely successful and can't wait for everybody to try it.
It's going to, right? You brought plant-based, which was one of the things, right? It is, like, it kind of had its spike, right? You had Beyond Impossible came out, and then it kind of dipped down. But I think now it's back on the rise with, I think, COVID hit, right? They were able to clean up their labels, rationalize their SKU list, so it wasn't, let's get as many products out. Now it's consolidated down. Because, I've seen the non-chicken chicken stocks, and it tastes like the real thing. And it just kind of blows your mind. You're like, wait, I can mimic the real thing, and I could potentially take out. Because it's not even just, you know, because typical vegetarian or vegan might be doing it for animal reasons or whatever it is, but a lot now it's really dietary restrictions, right? Like my little guy can't do dairy, so I have to play with all the different plant cheeses and the plant alternatives in the milk space because, you know, he's not allergic, but he's intolerant, and it's just, I don't want him to have an upset. So I get to play in that space more than a lot of people. So, you know, when they're like, oh, we have this, we have that, you know, all the different milks that are out there, and again, cheeses and variants. What do you see in that sector, right? You've got that thing, but what other trends do you partake seeing in that space? Is it plant meat? Is it plant, I don't know, right? There's so many things in the plant space that they're trying to do. Seaweed, I think, is coming into its own now. What, from your perspective, do you see kind of coming in that sector?
So I definitely see, you know, like, vegetables being highlighted extremely, like to a whole new level where they're literally center of the plate. I also see comfort food coming back, but like from a plant-based standpoint, right? Like you could have an awesome brat or an awesome hot dog and it could be full of vegetables, right? We were joking the other day. I had a terrible experience of a plant-based hot dog, but then I was like, look, if you could have just taken a carrot and like really seasoned it well and prepared it perfectly and charred it and, you know, and put that on a bun, like I would have been extremely happy, you know? And I truly feel that we're going to get that. We're going to get there, right? Like cauliflower steak, you know, or cauliflower wings, like, you see a little bit of out there, but I just think it's going to get even bigger and bigger. And I mean, we're going to start seeing sauces developed out of them. We're going to just start seeing all this crazy cool stuff. Like, you know, we see some of these chefs, some of these things that like, you know, Team USA is doing with the ACF, like creating, I don't know, a beet dish, right? A beet like nine ways. And it's like, yo, that is so mind blowing to me. Like, you know, to be able to create something super intricate and technical with using one ingredient, you know? So, I think that's where the evolution of, you know, plant-based and all that's going. The faux meats and stuff like that, I think they're going to keep dying down, you know? I think we're going to get to the point where, you know, little potato tots or something like that are going to become the new chicken wing or things like
more,
that.
Yeah. Like you said, center of the plate, it's going to take place of that. And that will be the focus.
And you start seasoning and spicing things a certain way and you develop more flavor, right? You let all those spices bloom and all those aromatics come out. And I think that's going to be the new thing, you know, mushrooms, taking mushrooms to a whole new level. I think is again, to my pozole verde with mushrooms, like, you know, charring them and then, you know, cooking them in the soup so that they didn't just all, you know, fall apart or turn into mush. Like, I think that's, you know, using all these different little techniques to kind of get you there is going to be super popular.
I love mushrooms. Like it's a weakness and everyone's just like, it's a texture thing for a lot of people, but I'm like, just give me just batches of mushrooms. I'll just eat them, clean them and eat them. You said cauliflower wings. Have you tried, I think Smithfield is making it. I don't know if that's correct or not, but they came out with some cauliflower wings. I know they're private labeling them right now, but blow your mind. I did like a mac and cheese. It's funny. I used the cream base that you guys have, just mounted in some, I think it was sharp cheddar and some smoked cheddar or smoked gouda, one of the two, and then just cooked off those cauliflower wings. And it's funny. They make them look like little actual like drumettes and sticks. And then just cut those up, throw them in it. And people were just like, what is this? And I was like, it's mac and cheese with the cauliflower wing. Like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, you don't have to have a chicken nugget per se, right? Or fake chicken. It's cauliflower. Yeah. If you haven't tried it, I have to get you some.
Yeah, I'd love to try it. And if it is with Smithfield, I have a great friend that works there. So he's
just ask him about it. They're private labeling them. I think, I don't know if they're mass distributing them, but I know that they're private labeled for a company, or a distributor. but they're delicious. Absolutely. They've got sweet chili. They got a buffalo. I think there's like four flavors or what, but they are just, they're so versatile, especially if you like, again, that kid does want to eat wings or chicken or for whatever reason, right? It's like, here's an alternative that's just, it's delicious.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'd definitely be down to taste that. Is there anything I can throw in the air fryer too? I'm a big believer of the air fryer.
Yeah.
Like I didn't believe in the air fryer at all. And then I got an air fryer for Christmas. It sat in the garage for about a year. And then finally one day I was like, I wanted to make some wings. And I'm like, you know what? It was too cold out to throw them on the grill. Obviously, you know, throwing wings in the oven is just, it's a different texture. So I threw them in the air fryer and I fell in love with the air fryer. And then I started looking up, you know, air fryer recipes and all sorts of things you can do it. So when it comes to cauliflower wings, I'm a firm believer in the air fryer just because they're going to crisp up and they're going to hold really nice texture and you can dip it in sauces and all sorts of stuff. And I love that.
Yeah, so you said you bring air fryer. You missed out for a year, my friend. Like I've had an air fryer for like the past 3-4 years. And the first one I ever had, I actually took it to the office because I got a larger one, the one you can do like a whole chicken in. So you can literally air fry an entire chicken if you wanted to, as long as it's not those mammoth chickens, you know? But we use ours like every day, almost every day. And I think I want to transition that into, you know, they make commercial air fryers now, right? I know there's a few companies out there and I'm like, wait, what? Like there's literal like giant air fryers out there now. I even played with one. I think it was last year. I was like, my mind was blown. I was like, for an account that can't do fried foods or whatever, I'm like, you're still getting that crispy. So on the equipment side, right, what are you seeing, right? You go and see clients and you talk with them. What piece of equipment or what are you seeing that they're using that just comes to be cutting edge technology or what's just fascinating to you on the equipment space in the kitchen?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, the rationales, obviously the vacuum sealers, all that kind of stuff. I was at an account in Nashville where they had these like massive, like, walk-ins, if you will, but they were actually smokers. What? And it was so crazy. Like you could put a whole rack, like a full speed rack, to smoke meats, to do anything that you needed to smoke. And or two, they had these ovens that were about like the size of a walk-in too. And I had never seen anything like that. Like this was a commissary account. So I thought it was really neat that you could, you know, the preparation of like, I think they were smoking hams that the day that I was there. And just the way they were doing it, it was just so mind blowing to me. Also seeing like these massive kettles, right? And tumblers to like chill like liquids and stuff like that. Like you can chill a soup, you can chill 10 gallons of soup in like 2 minutes. You know, it's insane. Like so seeing all that kind of stuff is really neat. You know, obviously at NRA, seeing all the robots, right? Do like, but then it makes you think like, who's like making the robot work though? Like you got to program it. You got to.
Yeah. Like, well, and with robot, like, okay. So robots, right? It's an interesting thing, right? You got Flippy, you've got the Java ones. Like, do you think it's actually going to stick? Like I can see like maybe a McDonald's or something where it's the same thing. You're doing it robotically over and over. But like, I think education, I think some of these, I'm like, how could a robot realistically replace a person when you need that particular skill to do something or move something or, you know, flames don't work, whatever happens. Like, do you really think like that type of robotics is going to stick around and develop more, or will it just turn into more of the equipment side where you've got like a rationale and you can literally, I need to roast a chicken and you literally hit the button. Right. Like I'm going to use my probe and you insert it and it just cooks you a perfectly roasted chicken or braised, whatever we did. I think, yeah, we did some al pastor and like I was able to just hit the button and just put the probe and just go. Like I didn't have to do anything. And I was like, well, this makes my life easy. So do you think it's going to be more equipment based technology, or do you think like the robots are going to come and actually start to support? I don't want to say take jobs because there's not enough people to fill the jobs in our industry.
Honestly, like I think it's going to be kind of like these faux meats where it's going to be a big thing for maybe a couple of years. And then they're just going to realize like the maintenance and the technology, keeping the upkeep, I think with something like a robot might, but then again, somewhere where you're right, it's really repetitive and there really is no customizing, a sandwich per se, like could be something where it fits, you know? I mean, what is that going to cost too? Like, yeah. You know, in the upkeep.
Are you going to need an engineer to work at McDonald's? Because what if the robot breaks, then are you screwed? Like what's plan B when said robot goes down and you got people constantly coming in?
And now you need an actual body to prepare all these, all these meals. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't really, I'm not threatened by them. I don't foresee them taking jobs over. I think it's just a fad for now.
Have you played with the new the rationale, the flat top they've got?
No.
Ario?
No.
Have you even seen it?
No.
Oh my God. It's like take the technology of like the rationale, right? And they put it into a tilt skillet basically. And so they've got big ones, they've got double unit ones, but like the technology in it, I saw it. They were like, here, we're gonna fry an egg, and they like turned on one half and the other half. And I'm talking like to a T, right? One half the egg cooked, one half didn't. And it's got like, if you want to do pasta, it'll automatically drop in like a basket and you can, you know, and it'll bring it back up when it's done. I was like, who would have thunk of this stuff? And yeah, it's just incredible technology. Like if you get up to NRA this year, you got to see it. Or if you don't know what rationale, like ask them to see the iVario Pro. They're incredible pieces of equipment. Just technology. It's crazy stuff in the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the kind of thing I think where my boss is kind of getting at too, where he's like, he wants to be more exposed to all these things because let's bring them over to our home kitchen in New Jersey, right? And let us play around with it. And how does our products work with these types of equipment, right? Because I just think like if this is the evolution of many kitchens, like, and if we can develop recipes, we're just making it a lot easier on that operator, right? It's like, here's a solution and here's how you cook it, right? Here's the recipe. Go ahead and try it. And then being able to click some buttons and get it done. I think that's, phenomenal.
Yeah. So recipe development, right? So what's that process, right? Is it just, I have a customer, there's a need. All right, let's use my, you know, your background, whatever, to figure that out? Or is it, no, we're going to work on a collective of thing? Like, what's the process for, or your creative process, I should say, for creating recipes or coming up with ideas that not only for a customer, but just for Unilever as a whole?
Yeah. So I think it depends on who the customer is, right? And a lot of pieces, you know, are involved with, you know, types of equipment that they have in the back of the house, processes that they can use, you know, all that has a say in the way we develop a recipe, right? So if, for example, you know, we're working with a chain account that says we don't have a range, you know, or an induction burner. Like all we have is a Turbo Chef or all we have is steam tables. We have to get really creative on how we're going to develop something. And then we got to go through the testing process, whether it's going to their kitchen, going to one of their sites, or doing a mock-up at our kitchen in order to make that work. So and then we have recipe development where we have a group saying, hey, I'd love to use your product alongside one of our sauces, right? To develop a sauce that's going to go on a sandwich or something like that. And then being able to either bring them in or go by them and work on that together. For example, I just did something at a big university and they were like, hey, we need to develop a queso, you know, but what I need is 100 2-ounce portions, right? So literally they were like, any chance that we can get this in like the next 2 weeks? I'm like, well, I'm not going to fly out to New Jersey to do this. So, you know, being able to access the equipment we have at home and to develop this type of recipe. So getting scales, getting it all 100% so that we can confidently pass that recipe on and say, this is going to work because we tested it.
So what's that timeline, right? Like you said, they needed it turned around fast, but what's realistic, right? Like, or how do you prioritize, right? I always find an issue of like, you have all these customers, they want all these things. How do you prioritize? And then the time frame to like work on that stuff, how do you work through that?
Yeah, it gets tough and complicated. Sometimes if it's a need where I know, you know, the equipment is going to be like in our kitchen in New Jersey, it's easy for us to go to our R&D team or our R&D chef and say, hey, can you work on this? You know, chances are he's around, he's able to do that. But it just depends. You know, I think we typically are pretty upfront with the customer and say, hey, this may take 2 or 3 weeks. You know, this way we can go back to the calendar, fold in 2 days to really work on this and make it happen. And then we also have other chefs, right? We get them involved too. Perhaps a chef has already done something similar and can provide guidance, right, as to how it may work and stuff like that. So there's a lot of moving parts, but we get it done. And, you know, we just being upfront and saying, hey, it's going to take a couple weeks, but we'll get it back to you. And in that university's case, they were like, we got to put an order in because school's about to start. And we really want to move forward with your product, you know? So they were like, if you can help us with that recipe development, we will start buying it ASAP. And that's kind of where we were like, all right, let's prioritize this right now, because we saw the opportunity, we saw the return. And so we're like, all hands on deck to make this work. And one of my colleagues, Chef Rudy, who's, you know, one of our senior corporate chefs, he was able to work with me and we got it knocked out. We did 3 recipes right away, got them sent off within like 3 days after we told them, after they asked for it in 2 weeks, right? And so I think too, the operator sees where we, you know, prioritize them. We're legit. We want to get this rolling. You know, we don't want to leave you hanging. We don't want to, you know, put you on the side or leave you on the back burner. Like, you know, that's my thing, right? When I work with customers, like, I want them to feel prioritized, and I truly do prioritize them. Even though we have a lot going on, you know, we managed to figure it out. So my wife would probably say, why are you always working? You know, or I tell my daughter, I'm always at work. So because I am, you know, I'm always thinking, I'm always writing something down. I'm always putting something in my notes just to kind of remind me of, you know, what I need to finish, or I thought of something. I'm like, we could fold that into there. You know, sometimes I call some of my reps and I leave them voicemails, or I'll leave them a text message and say, hey, I was on my way to do something and I thought about what, you know, your customer was talking about. Here's what we can do for them, you know. And it's weird how my mind works. I think a lot of chefs probably think the same way.
Stop. The brain does not stop. You're sleeping. I'll be driving and I'm like, oh, I just thought of that. I got to make a quick note or shoot a call or someone. Have you thought about this? And they're like, why didn't we think about that during the brainstorm session? You're like, well, because I don't know. I'm just driving and my brain is just racking and it just doesn't stop.
There's like that meme of Zach Galifianakis where he's just got like a million equations going on. Like that's how I feel sometimes. It's weird. But yeah, we get it done, man. We make it happen, you know.
That's awesome. Do you use recipe software? Is it old school pen pad? Just write down the ingredient steps. Old school? Yeah. And then just send it off like, hey, you do you with whatever software you got or whatever, but here's the baseline quantities, volumes, basic steps, and then send it off.
Typically, the operator has a software that they're using, so they just need something basic that they can input. And if literally keeping it as simple as in a Word doc,
you know,
we can just pass
over.
So then
you collect all those, like, so again, if somebody else, like, hey, there's an application that we worked on for X client, and oh, that would work for Y. Like, I think you sent us over your queso recipe, right? Yeah. And it was like, probably already had it. I can just shoot it, and then I don't have to spend X, Y, and Z amount of time. Cool. That's awesome. So what advice would you give to aspiring chefs, culinarians who are interested in the food industry? I know it's changing a lot. And again, a lot of people just think about, you know, the restaurant. Oh, you know, I know that's what was pushed to me. It was like, go work in a fine dining restaurant. And I don't know, just something was like, I don't know if I want to do that. So what kind of advice would you give those?
My advice would be to just keep your eyes and ears open, you know, and build connections, you know, and stay connected to people. I mean, I think that's probably the one thing that I did after I left Unilever the first time was I remained connected to these chefs, you know, and that's kind of why I was at the top of their mind when they were like, hey, we're going to be hiring for a chef. This guy'd be a great fit, you know? So you just never know what's going to happen. I think we're, you know, obviously the food service industry is we're entertainers, right? If you can hold on to a good conversation, you can cook, you know, you're able to sell yourself, or you're able to sell whoever it is that you're working for. So, you know, keep your eyes and ears open and expose yourself to as much or as little as you want to. You know, I did catering. I did fine dining. I worked at Subway. I worked at McDonald's. Like, there's, you know, tap into everything and see what's going to stick and see where you want to end up. But also, look at it from the perspective of being in this industry is not just being a cook, right? It's not just owning a restaurant or being the chef at a hotel. There's so much to it. You know, I always joked around that I'd never be a salesman, and here I am, you know, working for a big company and literally having to sell product. So yes, I'm still a chef, but we sell what we do every day, right? So get into sales. Maybe that's something that, you know, some of these young guys are really good at talking, you know, and it's like, you'd be a great fit to work at a big distributor one day.
Yeah, they always say what you should always work in what sales at some point in your life, and then either a restaurant or retail to see what it's like on that side, because it'll humble you real quick, right?
Exactly.
Of what the world is like.
Just expose yourself to as much as you can, and then turn into a sponge where you're just grasping onto everything, right? And then, you know, later on in life, you're going to realize what you want to do, what you truly want to do, or what wasn't for you, you know. That's kind of what we work with these students at the Technology Center DuPage. It's a ProStart competition. It's a national competition. And that's kind of what we try to tell them, you know. It was funny. Last year, we were working with a group of kids, and they're like, oh, I don't like mayonnaise. I was like, yeah, man. But you know what? It could pay you very well.
Yeah, it could
pay you very well. So, you know, it's just one of those things. You never know it. You know, you could be the corporate chef for Rationale one day, you know, and here you are working on cool pieces of equipment, you know, and developing recipes for the actual piece of equipment, you know. You could be a F&B director, right?
Yeah.
There's so many things that you can do.
There's a lot in this industry that I don't think they give enough exposure to. I think they're trying to start to expose that, you know, the different things.
But I think schools too, you know, the fairs, the job fairs, you know, we need to put ourselves out there a little bit more too. Like, for instance, you know, with Quest, how many people know about Quest, you know? That could be an awesome job for somebody coming out of college or somebody in college. Like, you know, it's just one of those things. Like, I worked for Quest for a little bit, you know, and it's just one of those things where, you know, everywhere you go, if you can learn a little something, you're bringing something new to the table to the next place you're going to.
And yeah, it's you're 100% right. Again, there's so many outlets and avenues. I think if you have a mindset of working hard, right, people pick up on that. I think that's still like at the core in our industry anyways, is if they see you working hard, like you can make up for a lot of deficiencies that you may not have. Because I got into food super, like, compared to most, like 24. And people are like, you know, it's weird to say now I can finally, you know, say that I've been in it over a decade. But, you know, a lot of people are just like, wait, what? And I was like, well, I just worked really hard. And I just was a little, like you said, I was a sponge and just watched what the other chefs did, watched what the other F&B or the director of ops, and like, what do they do? Why are they successful? And then just kind of mimicked. And then obviously then you get your own flair and style. But when you're younger, I think it is good to be kind of a chameleon and pick up what works and find what you like, right? Like you said, I don't think it's anything bad to jump around as long as it's in a good manner. It's not every 3 months or whatever, but it's like every year. No, okay, well, barbecue wasn't my thing, so I'm going to go into Italian. Okay, that was cool, but now let me go over to China and I'm going to go work in, right, in that cuisine, the Asian cuisine, and figure out what's cool and what's going on, and then I can bring that back or whatever it is. So, yeah, you're 100% right on that. All right, let's kind of wrap things with some rapid-fire questions that I got for you. So, first, most unique ingredient you've ever used?
Ooh, man, that's a tough one. Most unique ingredient, probably black garlic. I don't know, the umami, the funk, it's such a cool ingredient, and to be able to fold it into Mexican food, I think is really cool and unique and different. So, yeah.
Awesome. What's your favorite piece of kitchen equipment? Could be versatility, could just because it's cool and it's got flair, like, but what's that, like, this is what it's got to be.
Definitely the circulator.
Yeah?
Yeah. I love to sous vide. I just... The technology piece, the no stress, the no worry, that I love that, you know, especially when I got to entertain for or even for work, you know, you got a big show, you got something big going on, dropping things in the circulator.
Yeah, and you know what works really good for circulators is Hinkleman machines. get them the flavors packed in, and then throw it in the immersion, right?
You know? I might need a catalog. I'll definitely get my boss to buy some stuff, and we'll play around with it.
Oh, dude, it's crazy what you can do now. Like, you've seen some of the videos, right? We pickle, we marinate, we brine. We did a Brad's in the background, but we got to have him. So we did a test with vegetables, right? And we were like, all right, let's see the actual practicality of these greenback pans, because they're new technology, right? And so I was like, all right, I kind of have a mind for that weird scientific stuff. And I was like, well, let's just put one in just dyed water, and let's put one under vacuum. And an hour later, like we did, so we did, what did I do? It's celery. What was the other thing?
Bok choy.
Bok choy, yeah. Dude, after an hour under vac, it was like translucent blue. Blew my mind. The other one was just like, it kind of gone up it. And I was just like, holy crap. Like, all right, this works. So yeah, you mix that, throw that in the circulator. You got perfect food. Then you can sear off that steak or whatever you want.
Yeah. I mean, think about the fermentation process, right? Making a kimchi. Like, if you could make a kimchi in 30 minutes.
Dude, I made jardinara in, we let it set for a couple hours. And it was like, you got it at the store, because it's under that. It just pulls out. It blew my mind what we were doing. But yeah, so super cool. And last one. Kitchen tip or tricks, like what's been that one thing that you use and that you find yourself, even whether it may be at home in the professional kitchen, but like what's that one tip or trick that could be used?
I guess a tip for, and this is probably for a lot of young culinarians, right? A tip would be to, if you're following a recipe, if you have a recipe, read the whole thing. And I say this because I was that kid. I was that young cook that did not read the whole thing and just kept going back. And one, it looks silly. Two, you're going to be doing a lot of extra work. There were things that needed to go in the blender, and I'm over here trying to get the perfect cut. And I'm like,
buzz it up anyways.
Wait a minute. What, like, you know, so that's one tip. And then trick, I don't know. I think I just like to be playful. I like to make things look sexy, you know. So keep it interesting, right? Everybody eats with their eyes first. If it's Instagrammable, even better, right? So,
yeah, you bring up Instagram. So, you know, for everyone listening or watching, because this will be out on YouTube as well. You're a big social media guy. You got a presence. Love seeing your content. Where can people find you if they want to see more about what you do or Unilever? You know, where can people find you?
Yeah, so we have a big push at Unilever to be more present on social media. So I kind of took the task as like, hey, this could be fun. You know, I don't have to look at this as a KPI or something that we have to do for work. Like, you know, I'm just having fun with it. I love cooking. Obviously, I love plating up, and I love being able to, I've gotten better and better at, you know, doing videos, at taking pictures and stuff like that, different angles and stuff like that. So you can find me on Instagram. My handle is @chef_Alvy. And then occasionally we're on our company's Instagram also @UnileverFoodSolutions_US. And every now and then we do work with Fair Kitchens, you know, which I think Fair Kitchens would be great, a great topic for another day, but at We Are Fair Kitchens. So, yeah, man.
Awesome.
Reach out to me on IG.
I love it. I love everything. Appreciate you taking the time to come in today. Give it a listen. Follow Chef Alvy on Instagram, and we'll catch you on the sunny side.
Yeah. Well, wait. Before we wrap up, I did bring a gift.
Oh, I did. Bring I love a gift. Gifts. So, everyone knows so me. Everyone in this world knows I love the gifts, the swag. So, swag, even if it's food swag too.
So because it's the holidays, we've got our little Hellman's mayonnaise.
All right. Okay.
With the little holiday scarf.
Little scarfy on there. Look at that.
We got to represent, so we did bring your very own Hellman's hoodie. So,
all right, I'm going to have to hide this from my wife because she is notorious for snagging all of my food swag. She's just like, when did you get that? And I was like, you can't wear that, right? So, I mean, she's gonna love this thing, especially, you know, it's like, it's just clean, right?
It looks we'll get your wife one. We'll definitely get your wife one. Good luck trying to keep that thing white. I think this might be my second time wearing it, but.
Well, if I don't wear it out, right? If I keep it in the house. Well, I mean, I got two kids, so you know how that goes. But awesome, Chef. Again, thank you so much. Appreciate you coming in.
Awesome.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Thank you.
HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.